not to make this boring, we're going to have a few things to talk about, and then we're going to have a really hot movie, and then we're going to have a bang-up finale. I would ask the people sitting down here to move up and in so you can see the hot movie when we roll the film, because you're not going to be able to see it. Okay? Come on, move up. Do it. What? Okay, we've got a lot to do in a very short time, so let's go on with it. One of the fun things about being the new kid on the block is they assign you to committees. And at the first faculty meeting, there was an announcement made that I was chairman of the safety committee, whatever in the hell that was. And along with me, Max and Diana and Jim Walford and Aurora Valentinetti were appointed to the safety committee. And once I figured out where my mailbox was and how to get to classes, I sort of thought, what does that mean? So I asked some questions and sent a couple notes around, and I got a response. A couple of years ago, the university decided that each department on campus would form its own safety committee, and that committee would be responsible for safety procedures within the departments. And that made a lot of sense. That meant that we didn't have somebody from environmental health coming over telling the secretaries they had to wear seat belts at their desks, or that we had to put railings across the front of our stages, which I have seen done some places. They said, look, you people know what you're doing, you know what your risks are, therefore decide how to do your business so that nobody gets hurt. And that basically was the reason for the setting up of the committees through the various departments. In addition to the official people appointed to the quote safety committee, Ann Stewart is an ex officio member. She works very hard on the safety of the production. As does Malcolm Brown and all the staff. Now, what are we supposed to do? Well, we're supposed to establish safe practices. We do some risky things in this business, in a whole lot of different ways. Ask Charles, among other things. But when we do them, if we do them in a proper way to reduce the risk, then we do two things. We be sure that nobody gets hurt, and we're sure that we don't confuse the audience and make them concerned for the performer's safety rather than the character's safety. The other thing that the committee does is we act as a liaison with the university environmental health people and with the fire marshal. That means they come to us if there are problems. For instance, one night, just for the fun of it, somebody from the environmental health department went to see Hamlet Machine. And the next Monday, there was a gentleman who came knocking at my door and said, I'd like to talk to you about that show. And they were very concerned about the young ladies who were holding electric lights that plugged in on a wet floor in their bare feet. They didn't want to straighten their hair up. And so we had a little discussion about that and talked to Tom, and the next thing that happened is they were wearing insulated type shoes, so that wouldn't happen. Now, there was a document that was put together by this department a long time ago called Safety Procedures. Sounds ominous as hell. And we got a hold of and looked at that thing and revised it and made it practical. And I changed the name from safety procedures to production practices, because I have a real problem with the name safety, or the term safety. That sounds like something that we do with one colloquium a year. When in actual fact, the proper way to do our business, which is theater, is to do it safely. And so the document that you have is called Production Practices. And this is a document that we live by around here, and that we're going to live by. And it's just some guidelines of how we go about our business so that nobody gets hurt. And it starts out at the beginning, everyone, student, staff, and faculty is ultimately responsible for his or her own safety. The manual is written to assist you in safe production practices. Please read it and use it. I assume since all of you are connected with this university in some way or another, you can all read. I'm not going to read it to you. I would strongly suggest that you take a few moments and read it, but I would like to point out a couple things in it. Key point, each of us is ultimately responsible for our own safety. That means think. Think before you do anything, whether you're a technician, an actor, a box office person. Everything that you do can have a consequence to yourself or to the people you're working with. Probably some of the scariest times for me around here are when we do load-ins and strikes. When we have a whole lot of people all working together in a very short period of time to accomplish a lot. The greatest cause of accidents of any kind is people not thinking. Losing your concentration. Do not play loud music and carry on during strikes. You have to be able to hear. If somebody says, look out, and the music's louder than the voice, you may lose. Look about you. Look over your head and see what other people are doing. Look at the floor to see what's down there. There's a section in here that says, for strikes, you should wear hard-soled shoes. And so you should. We don't require it. But the reason for that is when we're tearing scenery apart, there are all kinds of nails and staples and things sticking up. And if you bring your little tennis runners or Reeboks in and you step on one of those nails and you get one in the foot, what you probably will win is a ride in a police car and a quick tetanus shot, at the very least. At the very most, you may not walk real well for a long time. So you need to look and you need to think. Now, if any of you are interested in getting hold of a pair of really good safety shoes, Max, who couldn't be here today, has offered to conduct a tour of the local Kinney shoe stores, and he will leave it to you. So if you leave your name to Cynthia, she will give it to Max, and you can all get together and take the shoe store tour. Right? There are things in here like no smoking in costume, and that's for a number of reasons. One of the things is that all of our theaters are outfitted with really nifty smoke detectors. They are very sensitive. And when they go off, the venues is a good example. The flashing red light flashes, and this huge klaxon goes off, so loud that nobody can hear. So if this happens to be during performance, I think it may distract the audience just a bit from what's going on the stage. Another point is cigarette burns in the costumes are hard to fix. They look ugly. Thirdly, some of the fabrics we use for costumes are just a little bit less flammable than gasoline. So if you don't want to, be a living torch, leave the live flame alone when you are in costume or in those theaters. Hazardous business. Think about that. And if the director says to you, now, what I want you to do is hang by your fingernails, and you say, gee, I don't think I'm strong enough to do that, you don't have to do it. Some of the most careful people I know are stuntmen, stunt people, because they assess the risks, and they do all the right things to protect their bodies, because if they mess up their bodies too badly, they aren't going to work again. And you, as young people in the theater, need to develop the same kind of respect for yourself. And that's not just performers, it's technicians. Technicians in the theater, especially the young ones, think they are all Paul Bunyan. And with my strength, I will do it all. And sometimes that can be very tragic. A former student of mine, when I used to teach in this town, came to see me yesterday. And she finished her degree up here many years ago. She went to Seattle U for a while and then came here. And she was here at the time when they had a different elevator system in Lyons. And it wasn't real safe, and they knew it wasn't safe. And they had a procedure. The procedure was that always, always two people would go to Lyons when they were going to use the elevators. And on one particular afternoon, and Louise was one of the students in the shop, one of the students said, "I don't need any help, I can handle it myself. Please stay here." And he took the truck to Lyons to either put something in or get it out. And he was going to be gone for an hour with the truck. And he never came back, because either putting something in or taking it out of the elevator, he accidentally hit the switch. The elevator took off, he jumped on the elevator or was on the elevator, they don't know, and he was killed. I mean, as the elevator went up, it just sheared his body in half. And it was because for that moment he thought he didn't need any help. He could do it alone. He was stronger than all the forces that could hurt him. So when we have the procedures, they're for a reason, because we do know some of the risks. In addition to this, and please do read it, one of the important things on here, it says, if there's anything you're concerned about, go to the stage manager and say, "That doesn't look safe to me. I'm concerned about it," and the stage manager will then get to the proper people to take action. Before a show gets into rehearsal, we have production meetings every week on every show, and things get brought up there and we get them solved. Once it gets into tech and dress rehearsals, we get a written report from the stage manager every day, and if there's any problem, those things that relate to safety are the first ones on the list that get handled. I mean, if the director says, "I would like 6 more lights because it's not bright enough," and there's a note to that effect, or the stairs on stage right need a railing because it seems that people are having trouble getting off, the railings taken care of before the lights. It has to be done. We also have a responsibility to our audiences to not endanger them, either the cast or the crews. And there is a procedure, and it's given to each cast by the stage manager during the tech rehearsal week, of the evacuation procedure for that theater and the fire prevention and fire safety procedure for that theater. They are written programs. Stage managers are given these and say, "Here is your responsibility to deal with." If you run into a problem and you're not comfortable with the safety, you feel that the stage manager hasn't adequately answered your question, or somebody else is endangering you, come to one of the members of the safety committee. That's what we're here for. And we'll help you and make sure, because we don't want anybody hurt. Also, sometimes, and especially for directors and designers, they get all carried away with doing that show, and we sort of come in looking at things like, are aisles blocked, are doors blocked, can the audience get out of here in a panic? Because when something happens, that's the biggest problem, it's panic. And we will sometimes have to say to you, "I'm sorry, you can't use that piece of scenery there, because it may block the aisle. Or you can't do that business because it may endanger the audience." We not only have a legal responsibility to take care of the audience when they come, but when we invite them, we have a moral responsibility to take care of them as well. Aside from the financial, if we kill them off, they won't come back anymore. So for all those reasons, we need to take care of them. Because you work in this business, okay, there is an accepted premise that you accept the responsibility for the safety of yourself, your co-workers, and that audience. And that's what we're doing. There are also some other things that are not written in a way that they are easily accessible to you. There are things that we have to live by called building codes and fire codes. And sometimes we'll have to say, I'm sorry, you can't use that curtain until it's flame-proofed. One, because it presents a clear and present risk. Two, because it's against the fire code. And should the environmental officer or the fire marshal walk in and run a flame test on it, they don't mess around, they don't say, I'm sorry. They just say, you're closed until it's fixed. So we try to take care of those problems. Now, the other thing that they've discovered fairly recently, last 5-10 years, is that the things that we use in everyday life, both in the theater and in our homes and any place, in industry, can hurt us. Things like toxic chemicals. I mean, for years, when I started in this business and we used a lot of dry pigment paint, you were told to mix the paint with your fingers. It's the only way to mix it up. And you mixed and we all smoked then. We smoked and we got the pigment in our mouth. And then we mixed dyes and we smoked and we got that in our mouth. And finally people began, you know, seeing parts of people's faces fall off. And they discovered that these things are really bad for you. We used to sculpt urethane foam with heat, with flame and hot spoons and things. And all this yucky black stuff would come off, and we'd go, boy, that's bad, isn't it? And we never used to wear things like safety goggles for the saws or saw blade guards, because that stuff couldn't hurt us. And there are a bunch of guys in town with only partial fingers who thought that, literally.
Asbestos cement is
yes, asbestos cement, all that kind of stuff. Well, the federal government has passed a law that says you are responsible for making any employee aware of the danger of the stuff with which they're working. And the university environmental safety thing group has passed that on and kicked it down to us. So we are in the process of first identifying every toxic substance in the steam shop, the costume shop, and in the office. Secondly, getting some sheets of paper called MSDS forms, which are called Material Safety Data Sheets. Every manufacturer must supply one of these if you request it. It tells you what's harmful in the stuff, how it gets into your body, how it harms your body, and how to use it safely so it doesn't hurt you. And eventually there will be a booklet available in the scene shop, in the office, in the costume shop, that will have the MSDS forms for all the possible toxic substances that we use. And when you go to work there, you will be required to sit down and read them. Not because we're trying to improve your reading, but because we're trying to save your bodies. And some of the stuff that you do may not show up for 10 years or longer. Then all of a sudden you don't see very well, or your kidneys stop functioning, or those kinds of things. So you have to deal with that. I've got to move along quickly. One of the things that we have to deal with, and one of the very clear and present dangers in theater, is the clear and present danger of fire. And there are a whole list of procedures that you should be acquainted with, as the stage managers tell you. But there is no substitute for a little bit of experience, either direct or vicarious. So we're going to give you a little vicarious experience on how to deal with fire extinguishers today, Kevin, will you roll the movie and would you people on the sides move up and in for the center so you can see it?
Fuel and heat. form a relationship known as the fire triangle. Remove any of the elements of the fire triangle, or interfere with a chemical chain reaction, and the fire goes out. For ease of selection, fire extinguishers are identified according to the ABC classification of fire hazard. Class A fires involve ordinary combustibles. The most common extinguisher intended for use exclusively on Class A fires is the pressurized water extinguisher. Using this type of extinguisher is quite simple. Hold the extinguisher upright, pull out the safety pin, and squeeze the lever. Aim the hose at the base of the fire. The water puts out the fire by cooling the fuel, so it is important to soak the fire well, even after it appears to be out. Smoldering embers can cause the fire to flare up again. The water in this 2.5 gallon tank will last for about 60 seconds, although the stream can be stopped and started again. The maximum distance the stream will carry is about 40 feet. As with all extinguishers, the water extinguisher should be recharged immediately after use, no matter how much water may be left in the tank. Class B fires involve flammable liquids, gases, and greases. This is a standard flammable liquid pan fire, used by experts to test extinguishers. Most extinguishers intended for use on flammable liquids are rated for more than one type of fire. This is the multipurpose ABC dry chemical extinguisher. The operating mechanism for the ABC extinguisher is similar to that of a water extinguisher, although the technique for its effective use on a fire of this size is very critical.
Basic thing.
Most important, never fight a fire if it's too big or spread out. The effectiveness of a fire extinguisher is limited by its size and range, and your ability to approach the fire. In addition to the problem of extreme heat, most fires produce toxic gases, which, in an enclosed space, can overcome you. If you choose to use the extinguisher, be careful how you approach the fire. Watch your hair and clothing. The flames can turn suddenly, and the force of the extinguisher can actually spread the fuel. Be sure the extinguisher is fully charged and working properly. In order to make sure the effectiveness of an extinguisher, you must be able to deliver a sustained and concentrated supply of extinguishing agent to the base of the fire. Neither a partially charged nor a casually aimed extinguisher can do this. Don't tilt the extinguisher. Some older types of extinguishers have to be inverted to activate, but newer extinguishers, particularly the dry chemical type, stop releasing extinguishing agent when tilted or turned upside down. And finally, remember, fire extinguishers work only if you find them and use them effectively while the fire is still small. The time wasted in hunting for an extinguisher and learning how to operate it can mean the difference between a small fire incident and a catastrophe. Despite the limitations, fire extinguishers can be effective in putting out small fires when handled properly. Familiarize yourself with the location and operation of extinguishers before an emergency. Take the time to read the label. Examine nearby fire hazard. In the event of an emergency, remember that the fire extinguisher is not a substitute for calling the fire department. Sound the alarm, and if possible, evacuate the premises before attempting to use a fire extinguisher.
I said, they should learn how to use it, they should use the directions, they should keep it in good shape, and they should only use it if they know that if they fail within the first 2 seconds, they can get out.
Types of extinguishers that we have in all our theaters. We do not have any ABC type dry chemical. So if a small fire is on it, the other type that we have is the CO2 or carbon dioxide. This little guy here. And some of them are bigger than this as well. The university does not do a good job of labeling these in terms of A, B, and C. You have to really get down and look for the A label on this, and you have to look for the BC label on this. So you have to learn to recognize them by silhouette. I have a whole list of things I'm going to take up at the fire marshal's office in June when we get a few minutes. One of them is to properly label our extinguishers the way they should be. Both of these have safety pins in them. And that enables me to pick this thing up by the handle and drag it around and not have it go off accidentally. It is also the reason that one of those young ladies couldn't get it to work early on because she didn't know that. This is the safety pin here. And there's a little tiny piece of wire that holds it in place. In order to operate this extinguisher, I have to pull that in. Now it's operable. So remember, you have to pull the pin. Secondly, point it in the direction of the shooter. Now I'm going to shoot this thing off into the trash can, because I want you to hear it. It's noisy. Some body, do not ever use one of these to try and put it out. That is carbon dioxide gas in there under pressure, and when it comes out, that fog has no oxygen in it. You cannot breathe. That's how it puts the fire out. Also, this cone gets rather cold. Because this thing does not have a proper handle on it, this particular one is being phased out. It is no longer legal to be used. That's why they let me have it to shoot off. If you feel this, it really gets very chilly. On occasion, these have been known to be used to ice up a beer now and then. Like, no. However, we do not recommend that in the theaters or the shops, because then when you need it, you don't have it. And there's no gauge on it. The only way that you can tell it's been used is to weigh it. And since you don't know what the original weight was, you don't know if it works or not. If the seal has been broken, or you see one with a broken seal, let us know immediately so we can get a replacement. If any of you want to shoot that off after we're done here today, I'll let you. This thing is the pressurized water, and if some of you say, gosh, that's so heavy, you know, I can't deal with that. I'll give you a little tip. These things are usually mounted about 54 inches off the floor, and they should be clearly marked. And if you are, you know, a small person, not very strong, and you need one of them, you say, my gosh, how do I handle that? One of the things you can do, and I don't know if I'll have to do it over here, is it's hanging there. Walk up to it and hug it. Just lean against it. Grab the bottom and stand up on your toes and get it off the floor. And then let it slide down the wall between you and your body. Then grab it and drag it to where you need it.
Whatever.
And before you use it, but not before you drag it, hold the pin. Okay. Now this thing has a gauge on it, and it shows if it's pressurized or not, and if it's heavy, it's got water in it. So periodically we go around and check the gauges. And as he said, this thing will shoot a fair distance, as you can see. You want to try this one after class, we can do that. I would strongly advise you that when you go in a theater to work, to rehearse, to perform, to work on a crew, to work as an usher, that you take a couple minutes and you walk through the theater and you find out the location of these things, where they are, so that if something happens and you see somebody's throwing a cigarette in the trash can or something like that, that you know where the right extinguisher is, you know how to use it, you can get to it and handle it quickly. Yes?
How hard is that water pressure?
Pretty hard.
If somebody's on fire and you do that.
It may hurt them a little bit, but it's better than the option. It really is. That's a good, safe thing to do. Yes, Jeff? Call for help. I mean, the tricky thing is, if it's chemical and you spray water on it, it'll do the same thing that that gal did when she used the dry chemical the wrong way. It'll spread. And if it's electrical, you can cause a whole lot more problems. Okay. I want to caution you, there's a third type of extinguisher this university has, and I've seen it in some of the offices. It's called halophane. They're in yellow things like this. And they're type ABC. They're the most expensive, and they put out the fire the best, but they're also the most dangerous. because halothane works by evacuating all the oxygen from the air. So if you ever shoot one of those off, get out of there quick, because you won't be able to breathe. And if you use it on an electrical fire, it produces phosgene gas, which is just a little bit less toxic than cyanide. And you sort of glow. The last thing that I want to talk about, we only have a few minutes, is for some reason or other, there are an awful lot of plays, movies, television shows written that use firearms in it. And I'm going to do a very quick firearm demonstration for you today. I have two blank pistols in this kit here. This is one. This wasn't originally a blank pistol. It was originally a real gun used for shooting. And you have to remember that these things were designed to produce great trauma to living beings. In most instances, to kill them. Okay? Now, the fact that we're going to take this thing and try and make it safe and use it on stage does not diminish that possibility. They're not to be played with. I've collected and handled firearms since I was about 10 years old. I have quite a few of them of my own. And when my children got older, that is old enough to say, Daddy, you know, can I see one of your guns? Instead of saying no, I taught them to use them safely. And there are two basic rules you have to remember. Before you learn how to aim it, before you learn how to load it, before you learn how to pick it up. The first rule is always, always, always treat a gun as though it were loaded. Even a pretend gun. Secondly, never, never, never point a gun at anything you don't intend to shoot. Whether it's living or otherwise. And if you remember those two rules, you will have no problem. Now, in the production procedures handout, there's a little note in there that says, do not touch props that don't belong to you. That's a basic rule of theater. If it ain't your prop, keep your hands off of it. If it's not where you think it should be, don't move it. Go find the property master and say, I don't think that thing's in the right place, and let them do it. Maybe they put it there for some other reason. A number of years ago, we had a student here in this university who picked up a prop gun that shouldn't have been left out unattended. As long as I'm here, I don't want that to ever happen. But it was one that he had no business touching. And he picked it up, and of course, he knew it was not loaded. And he stuck it in his mouth to show somebody how you commit suicide. And he blew the top of his mouth apart with a blank cartridge. The reason I decided to tack this onto this thing here is at the beginning of this quarter, any of you see in the paper where Charlton Heston got shot in the face with a blank in a movie? Old Charlton's been around for a long time. He should have known better. Some actress was doing something with a blank gun, pointed it at him, and he caught the force in the face. Now, what does that mean? Well, I've got to do something. Okay. What it means, I'm going to take a blank. This is just a little brass cartridge, and it's got a little gunpowder in it, a piece of cardboard. No bullet. Not dangerous at all, is it? And I'm going to load this thing. I'm going to put it here so it will shoot. And then I'm going to put these earmuffs on because it's going to hurt my ears. And I'm going to ask you all to plug your ears because it's going to be very loud in here. Okay. Now I'm going to take this perfectly safe blank and I'm going to shoot this piece of paper. Thank you.